Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to continue on in the Satipatthana Sutta, the section on the body, mindfulness of the body. The way I have experienced these different practices that we've been moving through in my own development is that it seems to me that the first one, the practice of mindfulness of breathing and then developing an awareness of just being present in the body and knowing the way the body is moving, both internally, feeling it from the inside, and externally, have enabled us to, enabled me, I'll say, to really enter into the body and be at home in the body, to have a sense of that the body is a home, is a place to rest, in awareness, and so whatever I'm doing, wherever I am, I'm at home in the body, and this is just such a wonderful practice, a grounding practice, a practice which gives us space, us presence to be with the unfolding life, the unfolding events, conditions that we're present with in our lives. So so I see that in my understanding, and I think that I'm kind of interpreting Bhikkhu Anālayo's approach to this, that the next contemplations, so these the next practices are contemplations, and they are also practices that we can bring into a kind of an immediate experience by bringing our awareness in the body, and they're also they're directed at our understanding, our misunderstanding of what the body is and the way that we project onto our bodies and other people's bodies and the ways that we get caught up in grasping and aversion and identification with our body and other people's bodies as something that's somehow separate from the rest of nature, that it has its own self-existence, that it has a kind of independence, permanence, even though we might not think those things and spell them out in that way to ourselves, it's kind of an underlying assumption that we operate on, that's an attitude that we bring, and because it's wrong, because it's mistaken, it creates stress and suffering for ourselves and others. So the next contemplation, the next practice, is called the parts of the body, and in this meditation, the Buddha deconstructs the body. So you know, it's a kind of a reductionist approach to understanding the body, And so, you know, and he does this in many different contexts. You know, he says we say something is a cart, and really what it is, you know, some wheels and some wood and, you know, an axle or, you know, whatever. And those are the, because we put them together, we call it a cart, but it really is simply a composite. And he takes the same approach and applies it to the body. So he asks us to imagine. He reviews this same body, this body that we've been talking about, up from the soles of the feet and down from the top of the hair, enclosed by skin, as full of many kinds of impurities. Thus, in this body there are head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, bowels, mesentery. I'm not sure what that is. I read once what that's supposed to be referring to. Contents of the stomach, feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. So it's not a complete list, but medicine at the time was not. This was before anatomical studies. And then he says, so he lists these different parts of the body, 32. And he says, just as though there were a bag with an opening at both ends, full of many sorts of grain, such as hill rice, red rice, beans, peas, millet, and white rice. And a man with good eyes were to open it and review it thus. This is hill rice. This is red rice. These are beans. These are peas. This is millet. This is white rice. So, too, one reviews this same body. This is, and going through, this is head hairs. These are body hairs. These are nails, teeth, skin, flesh, and so on. So when we do this, the intention in doing this practice is not to create disgust for the body. And he does use the word impurity, but it's generally understood that it's not that it's pure or impure. These are not objects that we would want to have, you know, on our living room floor. somebody's intestines or so there is this element of kind of revulsion that we feel, and what's being held up to us is, you know, we put this all of these elements, all of these pieces, parts together in a package covered with skin, and we project onto this this desirability, or we project onto ourselves. You know, this body should look in a certain way, should be, have smooth skin, have, you know, kind of beautiful hair. And of course, in our culture, there's a very strong push for, on both men and women now. It was originally primarily on women, but I think that men and women and people who are fluid gender identity are, everybody is has this pressure to look in particular ways. And so it's to look deeply at this and to recognize that, you know, what we are projecting is a false image. It's when we do this contemplation, the traditional way is to contemplate all of these things as separate entities. So for example, we consider the hair on the head, and as I said this morning at the instructions, you might see, somebody's hair and project it's, it's beautiful, it's flowing, and then if you find it in your food or you find it clogging up your sink, it's somehow not so beautiful. So it's really about kind of the whole perception, the way that we make this this sense of a self, a package, an object for desire. Skin, skin is especially youthful skin is seen as something, that's very beautiful. But actually, when you dust your house, a lot of what we pick up on the dust cloth is skin flaking off from our bodies. Our skin is always flaking off, and I don't know if you've ever been in a dermatologist's office and seen these pictures of the different layers of skin and how an abscess can form in the skin. So when we look at it just something that is a part of the body, it's evolved, it's constructed in a certain way to function in a certain way, but in itself it's not beautiful. And and in the contemplation, the Buddha has put together different objects, different parts of the body that are normally considered attractive or can be attractive, along with different objects that are less attractive, like pus and phlegm. So just to say, okay, just look, these are just all parts of the body, and so we're just with a measured eye, in the same way that somebody who is looking through a bag of beans and rice that ostensibly would be used for sowing seeds, because a bag with two openings, that's what it was used for, to allow the seeds to run out, there's no emotion or attraction or excitement about, well, this is red rice and this is white rice and this is millet and so on. So just to review the body, and so just to take a moment and just feel your skin and recognize that it's just it's just skin. It's skin, and maybe parts of it are a little saggy, a little wrinkly, it's feel the hair on your head, feel you know, we can feel the flesh in our mouth, you know, just running our tongue inside the mouth and feeling the gums and the roof of the mouth. And so this is flesh, and it's just, you know, it has tissues and water and mucous membranes and so on. And then we can feel the bones just by feeling our teeth and our jaw. So that's part of our skeletal framework. And so Bhikkhu Anālayo has a guided meditation in which he it's a very simple process, and he just invites people to the practitioner to just go from the head to the toes and just be aware of the sensation of skin. So you can't really feel your skin everywhere, but you might feel the hair on your head, which it's really the hair is connected to the skin. So he groups all of these different 32 elements as skin, flesh, and bones. And so just, you know, feeling the presence of the hair on your head. You know, if you bring your attention to your head, you might feel that. Maybe you feel the skin in contact with your clothing. And so just moving down the body from the head to the shoulders. And you can do this in your own practice if you want. Just you know, skin, just feeling skin on the shoulders, on the arms, kind of bringing your attention to the surface of the body, moving down on your chest and your back, and so on down to your feet. And then he suggests feeling the flesh, so feeling your muscles coming back up the body, moving back up, so feeling your muscles and fat and the organs, so all of those he kind of connects as flesh. So you can feel, you know, the softness of the muscles and fat in the body. You can feel, in your abdomen, in the movement of your abdomen, you can feel the flesh. And moving up again to the head, you can feel, as I suggested, the flesh on the inside of your mouth. And then on the third pass, he suggests that you go from the head down to feel the skeleton of the body, so all the bones of the body. So feeling the shape of the skull and the jaw and the shoulders and the arms and the ribs and feeling the pelvic. You can feel the sit bones pressing against the cushion of the bench, and sensing inside, feeling the long bones of the thighs and the lower leg, and all the small bones of the feet, and so on. Just working up and down the body, and it's a very helpful contemplation to recognize that this body that we may be attached to, identified with, and we might judge it as somehow it doesn't conform to the standards of beauty that you know, we think we should conform to, or we think it does conform to those standards of beauty, and we're very proud of it. So all of these, you know, it really cuts through. This contemplation really cuts through those delusive ways of thinking and those attitudes. And this is not a mindfulness exercise, so it's different. It's a contemplation or an examination. So it's to lessen our attachment to the body, and to help us to release that. Our bodies and the bodies of others as objects to be grasped, and it's not to, as I said, it's not to create disgust. It's really an antidote to grasping, and I think it's also an antidote to ideas that we may hold in the mind about how certain bodies, you know, maybe groups of people, ethnicities or this constructed idea of races, that some races are different than others, you know, in any deep way. When we do this kind of contemplation, you know, we really see that the idea of race is really a construct, and that essentially there's no essential difference between human bodies. It's whatever differences that there are very, very superficial. And it may come up in your mind as a question. You know, last night I led a body scan, which was bringing love and compassion to all the parts of the body, and so this might come up as a question. So is this a contradiction? You know, so am I? Is it, if I'm loving my body, am I somehow contradicting the purpose of this contemplation? And I really don't see it that way at all. I see it as a gratitude for the body, for the life of the body, for the support that we have in this life to live, to learn, to awaken, to become free. So, So then I'd like to go on to the next contemplation, which are the four elements, and so this is really one of my favorites. I love this one, and it goes on. So one reviews this same body, however it is placed, however disposed, as consisting of elements. Thus, in this body, there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. So the four elements is an ancient system of trying to classify all the different parts of reality. And of course, it's not a system that we use today. We use different kinds of classification. We have an atomic table, and we understand things are made of subatomic particles, and atoms form molecules, and these form different elements on the periodic chart of chemistry. And so it's a very different way of understanding, but but this four elements still has its usefulness in understanding that this body is not a self. This central teaching of Buddhism is that we and all objects, all forms, sentient and non-sentient forms, are empty of self. So in early Buddhism, that's the understanding of emptiness, that everything is empty of self. And I'd like to go on and talk about that, but I'm just going to finish the paragraph from the discourse. He goes on to say, just as though a skilled butcher or his apprentice had killed a cow and was seated at a crossroads with it cut into pieces, selling it, so he reviews this same body. Before the butcher killed the cow, you know, it was in his mind a cow. But once he kills it, it's the flank, it's the rib, it's the, I don't know, the different parts, the sirloin. And Alio points out that, you know, it's kind of, it's a little shocking, you know, this violent example about butchering a cow. And even at the time of the Buddha, this cows were seen with reverence, you know, and it's quite different from the beans, which are pretty, beans and rice, pretty neutral. So he suggests that the Buddha use this example to really get people's attention. So each of these elements can be understood in terms of the qualities that they have, and they can also be understood in terms of how our bodies are composed of them. And so earth element has the characteristic of having form and rigidity. So you can feel the earth element in your body by the fact that you're sitting on a chair or on a bench, a cushion, and you're not melding into the cushion, and it's not melding into you. You're maintaining the form of the body. So the earth element is characterized by hardness and resistance. And form. And water element is characterized by fluidity, flow, doesn't have a shape of its own, it fills whatever holds it, adapts to any form. And it enables the other elements to bind together. So when water combines with flour, it makes dough. And our blood is water combined with, you know, the hemoglobin and all the other parts of the blood and the nutrients that it carries to all the different parts of the body. And it creates cohesion in the body. It binds the body together. Water is the primary. I skipped a bit. Earth is the primary element in the body's bones, organs, nails, and teeth, and gives our body its shape. And water is the primary element present in our bodily fluids and tears, sweat, urine, blood, and saliva. And the fire element gives heat and light. It radiates, burns, and transmutes. And fire burns away impurities, it tempers and strengthens. And it manifests also as a rising element because it heat rises. So in the body, fire is the element that is heat or absence of heat in the body. And so this element supports the digestion of our food. And also fire is what ages us, our skin and so on. It's as we lose water and moisture from the body. And then finally the air element, the characteristic of air is expansion, movement, oscillation, and it manifests as wind in the world, and in our bodies, the air element manifests, of course, through our breath and in the movement of the body, and the body is continually in oscillation. Expresses itself also as gas in the body. And so I'm going to this evening for the guided meditation, I'm going to lead a meditation on the four elements. But just to reflect for a few minutes on the body. So feeling the earth element in the body, we can feel the form of the body. We can feel the rigidity of the bones, and the earth element. So that's reflecting internally, and reflecting externally. We're fed by the earth. So the food that we eat, we take the minerals. We take all the nutrients that is produced in the earth into our bodies, and it becomes our bodies. It's transmuted through the digestive process, which of course also requires fire. And the water element. So we can feel the water element in the body, in the saliva, in the moisture of our eyes. Perhaps we can sense it also in the softness of the muscles, because it's the watery nature of the muscles that gives it softness, in the tendency of the body to respond to gravity, like be pulled down by gravity, especially as we age. So because water flows downward, and of course, we're continually replenishing our bodies with water. So the rain, the river, all the water around us. Most of the earth, there's more water on the earth than there is land, and there's more water in our bodies than there is, the earth element. It's actually most of our bodies. And then the fire element. So we can feel the fire element by the sensing of temperature on the skin. So it feels, perhaps cooler on the surface of our body. And as we bring attention into the body, we can feel perhaps the warmth of the core of the body, which is where the heat is produced. So just bringing attention into the body and feeling the inner heat. And all of that heat comes from the sun. So the heat of our body is really the energy from the sun that has been transmuted by growing things, by green things, chlorophyll transmutes the energy from the sun into sugars, and then we eat that, or else we may eat animals that have eaten the plants, and so then in the digestive process we're burning that and heating ourselves. And of course that's what warm-blooded animals do, and cold-blooded animals need the direct warmth from the sun and have capacity to survive much lower temperatures. And then the air element, you know, we can feel it in our breath. We can feel it. We also experience the quality of movement of the air element just by getting up and moving around, moving our hands or whatever part of our bodies. So we think in our lives that we're interacting with people and with animals and with objects, and these are based upon our ideas about, you know, this what I, you know, what I see here is this object, or what I see here is this person. So we have our senses and our perceptions which interpret this. And really what we're seeing is a flow of, you know, in this paradigm, we're seeing a flow of earth, water, fire, and air. And every physical form we come into contact with is no more than a combination of the characteristics of four elements. And so, and these, this is a teaching, this contemplation is pointing us to really understand how we're empty of self. We're not in control of these elements. Like, you know, if we didn't have food, we would be able to survive, what, maybe a couple weeks or maybe a month at the most. You know, and we know that people are without food at this very moment. And if we didn't have water, well, maybe we could survive, I don't know what, a few days. And we know that there are people who die of thirst because they are without sources of water. And then, you know, if we didn't have heat, you know, how long could we survive? You know, would our body temperature go below a certain point and we'd go into hypothermia and we'd die, depending on how cold it is. And without air, you know, I don't know, a few minutes maybe. So we're not in control of our lives. And this, you know, totally undercuts our idea that somehow we are self-sufficient, that we're independent. We are interdependent. We are conditioned, and the sort of the opposite side of being empty of self is that we have, that our existence is contingent. And to really deeply take this in is transformative. It's transformative in many ways. It's transformative in that it might awaken compassion for beings who are being destroyed, their lives are being destroyed because of lack of water or clean water. It's transformative in recognizing that the idea that we have of inside and outside is just a construct. It's a mental construct. So, you know, here's water. So when was it part of my body? You know, when I drank it, later when I'll excrete it, at least part of it. It's a flow. It's a flow. And this sense of independence and that we are in control is, it's a wrong idea. It's misleading. It's false. And it's destructive because it's this idea that we are independent, that we are not interdependent, that we are not, that our lives are not contingent on the world around us, that we're not part of nature. It's this idea that has allowed human beings to be so destructive to the environment. If I feel that this river is my body, then I'm going to care about it being polluted. If I recognize that this air is part of my body, my collective body, then, you know, I'm going to feel pain when I see, you know, smoke being belched into it from different kind of industrial processes. So this contemplation on the four elements, it's very deep and very powerful. And as I said, I'll lead us in a guided meditation on it tonight. So let's just sit for a couple of minutes. You don't need to change your posture, and then we'll end the session.